We already have the tools to have a very rich human experience. We have the most sophisticated phenomenon called the brain, and we have our senses that are on us all the time and are on. If we learn how to use our senses and our brain, we will have an incredibly rich experience that needs very little resources, time, and money.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Helping with Dr. Richard Schuster. Food for the brain, knowledge from the experts, tools to win at life. I'm your host, Dr. Richard. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, and whatever you do, this is the show that is going to help you become the best version of yourself. Each episode, you will hear from some of the most amazing, talented, and successful people on the planet who followed their passions and strive to help others. Join our movement to get 1 million people each day to commit acts of kindness for others. Together, we're going to make the world a better place. Are you ready? Because it's time for your daily helping. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Daily Helping Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Richard, and I am so excited to share with you our guest today, who in a word is brilliant. His name is Dr. Izzy Justice, and he is the chief neuroscience officer at Neuro580, a groundbreaking company at the forefront of human performance, sports psychology, and mental training. As a pioneering sport neuroscientist, he has certified over 300 coaches worldwide and worked with elite athletes across multiple sports, many of whom have gone on to win major championships and Olympic medals. Dr. Justice is the creator of the NeuroHacks, rapid science-based techniques that remove mental distractions, boost focus under pressure, and help individuals and athletes achieve flow state in real time. With over 18,000 EEG-based functional brain scans conducted during live performance, he brings unmatched insight into neuroscience, sports, mental toughness, and brain wave management for peak performance. There is so much more I could tell you about Dr. Izzy. I can't wait anymore. I just want to start talking.
Oh my gosh, I didn't realize that was me.
That was you, Dr. Izzy. Welcome to the Daily Helping. It is outstanding to have us with you today.
Thank you, Dr. Richard. I'm privileged and honored to have you. You and I had a chance to speak briefly before, and we share so many common values, and I really am honored and grateful to have this time with you and your audience.
Well, we're excited that you are with us to share your wisdom and brilliance with us. But I want to, as you said, we spoke a little bit more, so I have the benefit of knowing a little bit about your background, but everybody listening to this doesn't. So let's hop in the Dr. Izzy time machine. Take us back to your journey. What puts you on the path that you are on today, sir?
Yeah, thank you for asking. And so, you know, I think it's a combination of so many random events and life experiences, none of which were planned. But, you know, as a person of color from Africa, I grew up in a highly dysfunctional family, and I immigrated to the U.S. to go to college, literally with almost no money in my pocket, and had to find my way through this world. I was the sixth out of seven children, so by the time I came along, I didn't really have a voice in my family because there had so many older brothers and sisters and a mom and dad. And I think I've been trying to understand a framework that worked for me initially so I could make sense of this thing called the human experience. And there are so many existing frameworks. There's spirituality, there's religion, there's science. There are all these wonderful models that our ancestors and our elders came up with to give to us so that we could navigate this thing called life. And for whatever reason, Dr. Richard, they weren't enough for me. I always found something that for me didn't work. And it wasn't until I stumbled on neuroscience. And even then, it wasn't until about 2015, 2016, when I was able to look into the brains of people functionally, not clinically, in the seconds and minutes before they wanted to do something to the best of their ability. And initially, it started with athletes. I don't work with just athletes. I work with regular people too, you know, executive CEOs, leaders, children, teachers. But it turns out when I initially started to do that, and to me, the game-changing, the watershed moment in our ability, this is my opinion, in our ability to understand this thing called the human experience, Richard, was the ability to look at a human brain wirelessly and functionally, which means even though we've been able to look at the brain for about 100 or so years, it was always in the clinical setting. You went to a hospital, you had to be very still, put a helmet on your head or go through an MRI scan and be very still. But that's not functional. You're not kicking a ball, throwing a ball, or thinking of an idea. And so I started to ask myself, like, is the brain in a certain state when we do something amazing? Is the brain in a certain state when we underperform at anything? I didn't know the answers, honestly, Richard, to this question. And the answer to both this question was yes. And if I can go on and then I'll pause, is, you know, I think I was in my early 30s when I think I first learned that the brain has electricity. I didn't know that. I literally didn't know that. And my first undergrad was in physics. So I worked a lot with force and electricity and movement. And not only does the brain have electricity, but it is the same electricity that we have in our light bulbs. Like, it cycles per second, it's movement. And Richard, if you think about it, you know, electricity is the language of the brain, and it has to be. It couldn't, there's no other phenomenon that we know of, whether it's light or gravity or osmosis or whatever you want, that could work. And the reason is speed. Like, we need to see something like a snake walking in front of us, quickly interpret that as danger through our eyes and our visual cortex and our brain, and quickly initiate a motor movement that makes us turn around and run the other way. That is happening in 1 or 2 seconds. Think of what could possibly enable that. It's not light because we're opaque. It's not sound. It's too slow. It's not gravity because it's too slow. And so electricity really is the language of the human brain. And I found in my studies, and then I'll pause, that somehow around 10 hertz, and the name of the subtitle of my book is Chasing 10 Hertz, somewhere around 10 hertz, two magical things happen. So 10 hertz on a scale, let's say from 0 to 100, is low. But Dr. Richard, I find that somewhere around 10 hertz, the sensory input that we give our brains is amplified because the frequency is low. We see more things with our eyes. We hear more things with our ears. We taste more things with our food. Essentially, amplified sensory input is the neuroscience way of describing what I think philosophically we call being present or being in the moment or the power of now or the deep present or the flow state. These are all, they're not real. I mean, they're words that describe something. But what is real is that frequency in the brain. So when someone says, in this moment I was present, it felt like nothing was going on. I was overflowed with, you know, what I was experiencing. That is happening around 10 hertz. And the higher you go up from there, the more diluted or competition there is for sensory input. And then our cognitive functionality also goes down. So one of the most common problems that athletes have at any level is they struggle with confidence. And Dr. Richard, confidence also is not a thing, meaning it's not an eye or a synapse or a gland or a hormone. You know, it's a label. It's an English word label that we are using to describe something. I argue that confidence is an access issue, meaning if the frequency in my brain is high, then I can't access inventory in my brain. So when I work with an athlete, a professional athlete, for example, but this applies to any human being, they've hit a certain shot millions of times. But when they're only accessing the negative one, so what you might call trauma as a psychologist, you know, the bad one that I hit, and not the other thousands of the good ones that I hit, then my confidence goes down. And conversely, if I, in the same moment, if my memory thinks of, oh, all the good shots that I hit, or the moments when I overcame something, suddenly I feel confident. I know I can navigate whatever is next. I'm making claims that at 10 hertz, the access to the correct inventory in our brain is amplified. And so we feel more optimistic, we feel happier, we feel more confident. So the real root cause to go upstream to get to those moments where I feel alive and present and in the moment, as well as access to inventory that allows me to feel happy and optimistic and confident, is to learn that in the brain there is electricity and it changes literally 2 or 3 times per second sometimes, depending on what you're feeding your brain or what you're experiencing. And so that's the skill that I want to, the language and the framework and the skill that to me made the most sense to decode my own human experience.
Dr. Izzy, I love this so much. We're talking about a couple of different concepts, and you mentioned athletes and they're focused on the free throw they miss. You know, this made me think of the famous study from decades ago where they took two very average basketball teams and they had one team visualize not actually practicing free throws, but seeing in their mind the ball go through the hoop, shooting those free throws. And over the course of a season, the team that visualized the shots going through positively overwhelmingly shot a higher number of free throws than the teams that didn't. So I love that. We're talking about a couple different things here, though. We're talking about, and I know they're connected, but you know, we're talking about electricity. We're talking about axons and calcium channels and all of these real nerdy structural parts of the brain. You've talked about frequency a couple of times. Over the years, we've talked about it on the show. I know a lot of this came out of the seminal research of Dr. Jose Silva, who worked for the military, and his research on alpha brainwave states was really seminal for a lot of the things that people are doing, including your work, which is so fascinating to me. But take us through brain frequency 101, because I want to spend more time talking about 10 hertz and what happens there and how we get there. But just to give us a kind of a 30,000 foot level overview of these different brain states.
So think about what your brain is doing when we're sleeping, right? So first of all, when we're sleeping, we're horizontal. So we're not balancing anything. We're not making sure our neck is sort of straight up. So when we sleep, the amount of sensory input that our brain is consuming or has to consume, as well as cognitive function, what decisions do we have to make? What do we have to coordinate? Is nothing. So the frequency when we're sleeping is somewhere between 0 and 5 hertz because there's nothing much the brain has to do. It's resting. Now, conversely, let's go all the way up. Think that you're in the middle of a traffic jam. There are accidents, you know, all around you, especially now with this bad, terrible weather. You're going to be late for a meeting. You're going to miss something. You're stuck. It's snow. Your brain starts to think of so many things to process, to navigate you being stuck in a snowstorm with accidents around you. So you can see now that the more work the brain is doing, consequential work, risky work, you know, where there's fear involved or those kinds of things, the frequency goes higher because the brain is accessing more parts of what happened, why did it happen, what do I do? There's a lot that the brain has to do. So those are the two extremes, right? One is I'm sleeping and one is I'm crazy mad. I want to throw something. I'm yelling. I'm screaming. I am cussing. So for the purposes of this call, let's imagine sleep is zero and that completely crazy state is around 100. Now, when you go to being awake around 5, so let's say between 5 and about 15 hertz, so now the brain is more awake. That is low in the context of 0 to 100. In that low state, the best analogy that I can give your audience in terms of understanding electricity is imagine, again, traffic. If you're going from your house to your favorite coffee shop, let's say 5 miles away, and there's no traffic on the road, you're probably going to get there in 5-10 minutes. Now, if there's medium traffic, you'll probably get there in 10-20 minutes. And if there's a lot of traffic, you might get there in half an hour. So the more traffic there is in our brain, the more our brain is working, thinking about the past, thinking about the future, thinking about all the consequences of the current moment, the electricity goes up. And when the electricity goes up, our ability to retrieve the better memories, the good shot that I hit, the past project where I did do something amazing, you know, becomes diluted the higher the electricity because there's just more traffic, there's more competition in the brain. And as you know very well with your background, you probably know this better than I do, Dr. Richard, is, you know, our brain is quite possibly the most biased organ because let's say that you want to learn something about something. Well, you might go to YouTube or ChatGPT and say, okay, hey, tell me something about this, whatever this is. That search engine is going to scour the internet, depending on your prompts, and give you the best possible information around that topic objectively. Now, your brain does the same thing in any given moment with whatever is happening to you, but it does not go to the internet. It goes to your brain and the inventory in your brain, as you know very well. And it's not going to go through the 100 good things about the current situation. It'll go find the worst one because the frequency of trauma or even microtrauma is so much higher. And so a higher frequency memory will always drown out a lower frequency memory. And most of our good memories, sensory input, when we're present, laughing, enjoying a moment, they're typically low frequencies. there wasn't a lot of drama there. You just enjoyed it. So our brain gives context to not just limited inventory in the pantheon of knowledge, but also just what is the most negative one. And guess what, Dr. Richard, your audience should know this. That is a factory setting of the brain. If I lived 100,000 years ago and I was in the Serengeti in Africa, and I was walking around with my family and I saw this beautiful animal with the mane, I was like, oh my God, what a beautiful animal. Let's go pet it. And as soon as we walked near it, it ate my child. Well, for the rest of my life, I need to remember that if I ever see a lion, smell a lion, hear a lion, I'm going to go run the other way. That inventory should be elevated. I need that inventory to be spiked in the brain because, you know, the trauma of losing my child. Now, replace that with anything that we do in the current world. And we're just consuming so much negative stimuli through social media. When I was growing up in Africa, literally, I'm going to age myself here, Dr. Richard. The way that we found about bad news around the world was through Time magazine, literally. And it was 2 weeks old. Like if there was an earthquake in Turkey, 2 weeks later, we'd get Time magazine and it would show pictures of the earthquake. So that trauma had a distance to it, even though it was a traumatic event. Today, if there's an earthquake in Turkey, within seconds, I'm going to see it on my, in my feed. I'm going to see rumble and people dying and people talking about it. So we have much more instantly shared trauma, which spikes our brain. And that becomes part of the inventory now that our brain is bringing in any context, which means that it has never been harder, in my opinion, to get to 10 hertz. Because the volume of our own inventory is so high, and most of that volume is constant negative trauma, which is a higher frequency. So it's harder when you're living at 30, 40, 50 hertz as your baseline to then get to 10.
Hey guys, Dr. Richard here. For the past 7 years, I've been privileged to bring you incredible guests who are changing the world and can help you become the best version of yourself. I'm really excited to share with you a new quiz that I created based on my clinical training that will curate for you a custom list of my top episodes and actionable strategies to help you wherever you are on your journey. All you need to do is go to drrichardschuster.com to take it, and it's 100% free. You'll be taking the next step on the journey to unlocking the power of you, and I can't wait to see where you'll go. There's a lot you've said here that's really interesting, and the analogies you're using are terrific. And another one came to mind, it popped up in my brain as you're talking, is it's kind of like your phone. And if you've got all your apps closed, it's smooth and your scrolling's cool, when you've got 20 apps running in the background, your processor has to work more, you've got 50 tabs open in your browser, your things are slower, it's taxing on the phone entirely. But if you shut everything down and you've just got one app, now all of a sudden your battery is lasting a lot longer, things are running a lot smoother. And that makes a lot of sense. And social media is something that we talk about a lot. I've talked about it many times over the years. And you know, the algorithms are designed to give you more of what you're looking at. So if you're looking at things that are negative in nature, and a lot of us do, or you're surrounding yourself in terms of your group of friends on social media that are constantly posting negative things, that's what you're feeding yourself.
Yeah.
And so not only are you essentially creating a constant fear and anger state for yourself, which has all sorts of cascade of, you know, cortisol, which is a terrible hormone that you've got it, you know, released, and you know, stress, and it affects your immune system and weight gain. There's all these constellation of bad things that happen when we're constantly exposing ourselves to that. But the flip side is, and you're talking about it in a really beautiful way, Dr. Izzy, all of that noise is keeping us from experiencing that lower frequency, to down-regulate our brains to this lower frequency where we experience all these wonderful emotions and positive things and flow. And so, you know, with all of that kind of as background, you know, now, you know, everybody listening to this is amped up. Oh my God, what do I do? Dr. Izzy's here to tell us what to do.
Yeah.
So how do we silence, other than just throwing out our phones in the trash, what are we doing here?
I don't think that getting rid of our phones is a realistic answer, at least not for me. I do so many good things on the phone. I do my banking, my healthcare records, my communication with my family, my calendar system, my email. So the idea that we can get rid of our phones, I don't know that that's the best option. I think the better option is the following. So if you'll just give me a minute or two here, Dr. Richard, is I think the first thing that I would like to suggest to your audience is we need to consider letting go of the traditional model of what wellness is and convert it into a much more realistic and a neuroscience-based model of what mental wellness is. So traditionally, I think we all say, oh, I want to be healthy. I want to be calm. I want to be focused, right? And I would like to suggest that that is not realistic. What is much more realistic and a significantly easier ask of self, Dr. Richard, and of others, is to say, what are the moments in each day that I need to be at 10 hertz, that I need to be at a point where I'm accessing all of the correct inventory in my brain to give me confidence, optimism, hope, and my sensory input is amplified so that I'm in the present moment. So letting go of, I need all these resources and I have to be perfect all day long, all week long, all month long, all year long, that is too much of an ask. There are too many variables, changing variables, to have that be a realistic target. Instead, it's easier to look at your calendar each day and say, what are the one or two or three moments? And in those moments, I'm going to neurohack myself just for those moments, maybe a second or two or a minute before that moment where I need to be at my best. That moment could be, you know, I'm getting ready to take a test or a quiz if I'm a student. I am getting ready to pitch in front of a customer or a client. I have to brainstorm something and solve a problem. I have to sit with my spouse or my child and go for a walk, and I really want to be here. I don't want to be thinking about the 10 million things that my brain is already thinking about. I think if we became better at saying, what are the moments? You don't have to be at 10 states in a flow state when you're in the bathroom, when you're driving to the grocery store, when you're working out in the gym. So this sort of, you know, negotiation and proactive selection of what are the moments in each day, literally each day, and in those moments to neurohack your brain. Now, what is a neurohack? A neurohack is something that uses only what is on you, and it only takes a few seconds. So we have longer neurohacks. So for example, if I went and walked for an hour, listened to music, yeah, I'd probably get my brain waves down. If I went for a swim, yeah. If I cooked my favorite food and tasted the food, yeah. If I sat on the beach, you know, on a hammock, yes. But those neurohacks do not apply or are not practical in the real world. So I do yoga and meditation and mindfulness every morning, right? And I'm usually done by 7. The cognitive benefit of what I do is gone by 8 a.m. because now my mind is still racing. So these are good habits to do, but they take too long and they're structured. I got to go change my clothes. I got to put a yoga mat on. I got to turn the lights down. I got to go somewhere. So a neurohack uses literally your feet, your hands, your mouth, your eyes, your nose, literally what you have on you. So we are amplifying sensory input in a very structured way, and we're triggering our brain. So let's do one, you and I, right? And in the book, I give many more examples. So the name of the book is Life Explained, Chasing 10 Hertz. My argument is, in every human endeavor and activity, we are chasing 10 hertz. We all want to feel that moment when we're not thinking, when we are much more present, when we're enjoying something, when we're in this creative bliss of ideas just coming into our brain. So we're always chasing that, and we do activities, hopefully, to sort of get us there. And some are nefarious and illegal activities, like drugs. A lot of drugs have the same cognitive function as these neurohacks that I'm going to teach you, but they're in the book there. So let's do one together, shall we? So this first one, please don't start it until I say go very loudly, because I got to explain it to you. So when I say go very loudly, which is not now, Dr. Richard, I want you in your own mind, not out loud, to count from 1 to 10 as fast as you can, as long as you can say the numbers. So no mumbler, blur. No, we don't want that. We want to do 1, 2, 3 as fast as you can until you get to 10. As soon as you get to 10, go back to 9, all the way back to 1, literally as slow as you can, and take your time doing it. Ready?
And this is in my mind. I'm not stating
this. This is in your mind, and you can even close your eyes if you want.
Can the audience do this at home, presuming they're not driving a car? Okay, if you're driving, don't do this, but yes, okay.
Ready?
Yes.
And go. Okay. What did going from 1 to 10 feel like to you? Any labels that you might have?
Hurried, rushed.
Hurried, rushed. Okay. What did going from 10 to 9 feel?
Settling, grounding.
Settling, grounding. All right. If I measured you, and my team and I have done thousands of these measurements, I will tell you that you took your brain in the rush to somewhere around 40, 50 hertz. And when you went back down, you took it closer and probably in the teens. I feel very comfortable making that claim because we've done those measurements. Now, how long did it take you to do that?
It was several seconds going up, right? I mean, maybe a second or two. I was very fast, as I'm sure everybody listening to this was who did this. And then, you know, maybe 7 or 8 seconds on the backside, okay. Right?
So all in all, somewhere around 10 seconds, right? Now, in 10 seconds, think of a noise cancellation device. You just took your brain from wherever it was by doing that neurohack to a lower state. Now, the question you might ask is, well, how long will I stay there? And our research shows that it's anywhere from a couple of minutes to about 5-10 minutes. But that's long enough. That's long enough for your brain to think of the next thing that you want to do. Because your brain only needs a few seconds to access a better set of inventory, to amplify something, to come up with an idea to do next. So maybe the best piece of advice I can share with you and your audience, Richard, is every human being's first response to any situation, any challenge, is to get your brain towards 10 hertz. Like no matter what happens to our life, no matter how complex, troubling, challenging, if the first move is always to lower the frequency, it won't make the challenge go away, but it'll give your brain better access to inventory to address it. The second move will be far more better because you're just accessing better parts of your cognitive functionality and your inventory, and now you're also amplifying input. It's so much of an easier ask. Think about this, Dr. Richard, for me to say, wait a minute, I don't need any app. I don't need any instrument. I don't need to change clothes. I need to go anywhere. I can do that wherever I want, and I can do it the moment before I want to be the best version of myself. And no matter what happens to me, the first move is always the same, which is move your brain towards green, right? Deactivate the neurobiology and the neurostructure of the brain, which is the fight and the flight, and just give your brain a chance to think of the next move, is so much easier than I got to solve the problem, I'm in trouble. That is an easier daily ask. It's a different wellness model.
What I like about that, well, there's a lot of things I like about this, but one of the things that I think is really important, and it sounds like your morning starts like my morning in a lot of ways, but the recognition that these cognitive effects don't last terribly long. And so one of the things that I've done for many years as a strategy when I'm planning my day is the most cognitively intense things I have to do on a given day, I start my day with those so that by the time the day is winding down, responding to emails, more kind of automatic things for me that I could do in my sleep, so to speak, those are moved towards the end of the day. So when you're saying, you know, we enable these things, whether it's through, for you, it's yoga and meditation. For somebody else, it might be getting a workout, you know, which has positive effects on our body and brain. It's attacking those things early while we have the cognitive benefits. And you've given us a very simple tool that we just did in 10 seconds.
Yeah.
That can kind of reset that for us for even a few minutes, which is really interesting from a strategy standpoint.
Yeah. And again, this is not an either or. This is an and. You know, still do the workout, still do the yoga, still do them. But a lot of us don't have the luxury of doing the most complex thing first thing in the day. It might happen in the afternoon. You know, you're on a Zoom call in the afternoon and your customer is yelling at you. Well, in that moment, what do? You can't call time out and say, well, let me go do 1 hour of meditation or mindfulness and then I'll come back. So think of the neurohacks as a during the day model, wellness model, and then the traditional models as, you know, when you have blocks of time available. Both should be considered as part of your toolkit. And I might argue that there are certainly events in the day that you know are on your calendar, so you can anticipate that they will be stressful. So in the workday, I find people spike when they have to give somebody else feedback. They spike when they have a meeting with their boss. They spike when they have a budget to cut. These are predictable moments. But there are also moments throughout the course of the day that are unpredictable because we're humans and we're living life. So these neurohacks, and there are dozens and dozens of them that we've developed, I think the longest one that we have is 30 seconds. But the average one is around 8 to about 12 seconds in length. And again, I want to underscore, Dr. Richard, is we are asking people that we have found ourselves in a human experience that we are not prepared for. We need a different set of skills to manage the constant distraction of our brain and the bias of our brain because it's gone higher, not less. We're consuming many more microtraumas without even knowing it. And so the moments when we need to focus, when we need to be the best versions of ourselves, we have to be much more predictable about them. We need a different language. You know, and to me, 0 to 100 is a much better language and a framework because it's real, number one. It's not, I mean, we have 600 emotional labels, mad, glad, hangry, annoyed. None of us took a class on what they mean. And having so many labels can be confusing. And they were developed by our Bronze Age ancestors, good people, who didn't know where the sun went at night. But we now have access to the brain. We know when someone is mad that it's a very high frequency. And so why have multiple, you know, terms for the same thing, mad and angry and annoyed and frustrated, and just say, oh, okay, now I'm between 60 and 70 hertz. Okay, that's a long way from 10. What can I do? And so the ask is pick the moments in the day when you need to be the best version of yourself. Use these types of neurohacks and learn a new language. And I found that when people are the best version of themselves in the moments that matter, it then has a cascaded impact to the rest of the day. And conversely, when you're not the best version of yourself in the moment that mattered, it has a negative impact to the rest of your day. And on a daily basis, that is the one habit of picking when you need to be your best and understanding that it is a cognitive function. Even if you're an athlete, it's your brain that is the quarterback of all of your motor movement and all of your life experiences.
I love this, Dr. Izzy. I know you've got a new book, which recently came out. I want to give you a little time to talk about that because it's exciting.
Thank you. It is my 10th book. It's called Life Explained, and the subtitle is Chasing 10 Hertz. Like I said, I went through 30 plus years of experiences to craft what I think is the most simplistic way to understand the human brain. We've gone through all types of education, formal and informal, in our lives, all of us around the world, from our parents, from our relatives, our teachers, our school system. And somehow, Dr. Richard, we left out understanding the brain, like the one thing we are going to use for everything forever. So in the book, it took me harder and longer. It was harder work to simplify the understanding of the brain from a functional perspective, not a structural perspective, because that's what we all care about. I don't know how the carburetor in my car works. I don't need to know. I don't need to understand the neurobiology of my brain, but I need to understand, you know, small things so I can navigate. I can use it to my advantage on a daily basis. So in this book, I talk about trauma. I talk about kindness. In my research, I found even from a forensic perspective, even when people are talking about a kind act that they did last month or last week, the spike down in their own brain when they're describing their act of compassion or kindness is stunning. It turns out kindness is a bigger gift to self than it is to whoever it is that you are generous to. These are things that I think people need to know from a neuroscience perspective, just how powerful kindness is. Like, it is a gift to self. It is a spike down. It is a healthy inventory to have for you, much less the act of kindness that you did for somebody else. So I talk about all of these things in a neuroscience way, in a simple way, I'm making an attempt, I'm trying to simplify our understanding of this thing called the human experience.
I love this. I love everything about this. I've said on this show probably more times than I could count that we are biologically wired to feel good when we help other people. And
I have data.
I've often talked about it from a neurotransmitter standpoint and a brain hormone standpoint. You're talking about it from a frequency standpoint, which is so fascinating, but two sides of the same coin. Dr. Izzy, I absolutely have loved everything we talked about today. As you know, I wrap up every episode by asking my guests just a single question, and it is, what is your biggest helping, that one most important piece of information you'd like somebody to walk away with after hearing our conversation today?
We already have the tools to have a very rich human experience. We have the most sophisticated phenomenon called the brain, and we have our senses that are on us all the time and are on. If we learn how to use our senses and our brain, we will have an incredibly rich experience that needs very little resources, time, and money. You have your senses on you, which you use to amplify every human experience, and you have your brain that can dream, problem solve, create, show emotion. We already have on us what we need to have a rich human experience.
So well said. The book is called Life Explained, Chasing 10 Hertz. That's available everywhere, and we will have a link to it in the show notes as well, so you can pick it up. But Dr. Izzy, if people are just so fired up about what they heard today and they want to learn more about you and the work that you're doing, where can they find you online?
Oh, thank you, Dr. Richard. My website is drizzyjustice.com, all one word. All my social media links and handles that my team does for me are all there. There are videos there. There's a lot of good peer-reviewed studies as well there. So again, drizzyjustice.com.
And if you're in the gym or in the car, we got you covered. Everything Dr. Izzy is going to be linked again at the show notes at drrichardschuster.com. Izzy, I enjoyed our conversation so much today. Thanks for spending time with us and sharing your wisdom.
Thank you. All right. Cheers. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. And I want to thank each and every one of you as well today who you took time out of your day to listen to this. If you're excited, if you're fired up, if you're going to do these little neuro hacks to get your brain into 10 hertz, go give us a follow and a 5-star review on the podcast app of your choice, because this is what helps other people find the show. But most importantly, go out there today and do something nice for somebody else, even if you don't know who they are, and post it in your feeds using the hashtag MyDailyHelping, because the happiest people are those that help others.